Radio's coverage of AusCert's 2008 conference is sponsored by Microsoft. Visit itradio.com.au/AusCert08 for IT Radio's full coverage of this year's event and to hear Microsoft's AusCert presentations. Or go to itradio.com.au/security for the Risky Business podcast, honing your eardrums since February 2007.
In this AusCert talk, self-described security geek Dan Klein paints a disturbingly bleak picture of the security landscape. It's a shame that this is just an audio presentation. The slides he was showing were quite funny, usually photos of people doing stupid things. But the talk itself is still worth listening to, just as audio. Enjoy.
So you're defending against past vulnerabilities, new attacks, you're winning. Each battle as it's waged, and the problem is you are doomed to ultimately lose the war. Because this is a game of attrition. This is a game of catch-up. And anytime you're playing catch-up, you've lost. So, yes, sire, we are losing the battle, but this is just an exhibition. The real battles start next week, where we get really tromped. So, another warning. I'm going to express some unpopular opinions. This is the session which either gets me invited back next year or gets me banned next year. I'm not sure which. The problem is I'm right, and I've been hearing other people saying the same thing, but not quite so strong. Doctors have this thing called M&M. It's mortality and morbidity. After an operation goes south, after a patient dies, they go ahead and they ask themselves, why? What is this conference about? Oh, by the way, and why so that we don't do it again? What's this conference about? It describes the diseases, it's discussing the symptoms, it's defining the cures. There's some prophylaxis. The problem is I want genetic engineering. I want my patients to be immune to the disease. My existing patients, not the ones that are yet going to be born. Now, security is a mindset. I know you know that. It can't be an afterthought. It can rarely be added on later because by then it's too late. We all know about principle of least privilege. Rights can be given away. They're much harder to take away once you've given them to somebody. Best practices cannot be a checklist. Unfortunately, too many people go, oh, well, I'm following best practices. Check, 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 check. Sorry, we're in Australia. Tick, 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 tick. And that doesn't work. But you knew all that, right? I'm not telling you anything you don't know. Good security is going to balance protection and convenience. Right? It's broken by stupid passwords, by backdoors, by implementation shortcuts, by crappy design, by bad features, by lack of peer review, by closed source. And sometimes open source has problems also when you're not looking for the particular problems. But you knew all that too, right? There's false security, right? Cut away justice, liberty, equality, freedom, and get security. That's the government's definition of security, at least as far as my TSA is concerned. But here's the real problem, or one of them. Users are ignorant and they're naive because they are not the INTJs that we are, right? Hackers are going to exploit this, right? It says there, so my problem is that I'm running Windows 98 without something called a firewall? Well, no, that's a byproduct of the problem. The problem is that you're an idiot. Pointy-haired bosses are also idiots. Right? They set unreasonable development deadlines. Right? We have to ship this because we've advertised it. They let sales drive technology. And they are going to push insecure products out the door because we can fix that in the next release. No, we can't. It's too late. As soon as the first one goes out the door, now you've got a problem because there are people not going to upgrade. Right? They like Windows 98. And hackers are going to exploit this. But you knew that. It is possible to learn how to walk on water, but I'd really rather know it before I need to. Even good developers are going to make mistakes, right? There was recently something reported where Samba was crashing when it was serving MS-DOS files, and this is, of course, a bug in Samba, right? Well, it turns out, no, it's a bug in the seekdir and readdir code in Unix. And this was documented in vnode.ch. The bug has existed since 4.2 BSD. Now, I used to teach kernel internals. I remember reading that code and deciding I'm not going to teach this because nobody's going to need to ever look inside there. It works. I'm not going to worry about it. And I know that a lot of people looked at it, but it's been a bug for 25 years. And it's open source, and thousands of eyes had the opportunity but not the inclination to look at it. There's also the recent Debian Ubuntu improvement to SSH, right? And the reason that happened, according to some accounts that I've read, is that they purify the code checker said, oh, there's uninitialized data, right? And so it removed the seeding of the OpenSSL pseudorandom number generator. And hackers exploit this too. So I have a question for you. How many of you could have made the same mistake? So I'd like you to all go ahead and vote here. And you'll notice that your things aren't working. Because this was 100% fake. So... So you guys are security people, and did you notice how the clock was counting? You know, 10, 1, E, 7, 3, and so on. And did you notice the sound wasn't quite right? And that's almost the Oracle logo, because I couldn't find it online fast enough. But you guys were fooled. Imagine what my mom does. Yeah, sure, here's my password, here's my bank account number, here's my social security number. So I'm going to make an incorrect statement here, politically incorrect statement, but somebody has to do it. Right? This is something you all already know. Microsoft Windows is crap. I'm sorry. Hackers are going to exploit this also. And by way of example, Scott Charney's talk, first day, he talked about defense in depth. And he said, whoops, he said we need firewall protection and don't open unknown attachments so the user won't get infected. Now, what part of the depth aspect of defense has an operating system which allows users to be infected? Where it's possible just by opening a web page, you can get infected. You can't build a house on a foundation of sand, right? It just doesn't work. So there is the security problem that I'm trying to address, is the core technologies have big problems. And yeah, okay, fine, Unix, Linux, macOS have issues too. So I'm not completely Microsoft bashing here. But who the hell designed this ride? I love it. You really got to wonder about that one. But the thing is, some of this stuff has been around for so long, and the problems are endemic. So where are you guys? You're the well-meaning, hardworking people tasked with defending your company's network, and you're stuck in the middle of all of this. You're stuck with the crap on one side and the ignorant users on the other side, and you're trying to protect all of them. So let me say this on your behalf.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
And I'm going to ask you all not to do that also. So why do we put up with this? Why do we allow our bosses to buy crap, to push out crap, to sell crap, to not test against crap, to allow sales to improperly drive development? And why do we do it? Right? We're the INTJs in the world, thank you very much, and there's 3% of us, and we're trying to tell users, here, just what the hell are you talking about? Because when we do this, when we are party to this, we get spam. There's a new spam site found every 3 seconds. We get break-ins, viruses, worms, DDoS, botnets, lost data, headaches, and phishing, farming, flashing. I just heard about flashing. It's when you drive by and you destroy somebody's hardware, rootkits, and so much more. And you already knew that, right? Right? Nothing new. But it's much, much worse than that. That's the problem.
This is an electric generator. It is vital because it is the kind that power companies use to bring electricity to your home. It shudders and shakes, then goes up in smoke, destroyed just as effectively as if with a smuggled bomb. But all it took was a computer, some patient work, and the click of a mouse.
What's new here is that through a cyber attack, you can actually get in and cause physical damage to equipment. That's the new piece of this.
This previously classified video of a test cyber attack on a power plant control system has sent shockwaves through the federal government and the power industry.
Now, I want to address two things in his statement. First of all, he says, this is the new part of the attack. You can actually damage hardware. No, this is just the part that they just discovered. Right? It's been around for a while. But the other thing is, notice the statement, this has sent shockwaves through the power industry. Allow me to translate, that's, oh shit. Right? You mean the unencrypted debug and maintenance port that's open on the public IP network is a problem? Really? It's password protected? What do you mean, clear text? Two-factor authentication? Well, it's got a username and a password. That's two-factor, right? SSH, VPN, nah. It's a little late to think about security. It should have been built in. And it's a little bit late to think about safety. This is going to hurt. Porn viruses. This is a really great one. In Iraq, the Iraqi souk is the source of scourge. Took me a while to come up with that alliteration. Porn dog soldiers go into the souk and they buy bootleg porno DVDs, which are, of course, infected with viruses and give them ram rot. Ugh. But here's the quote that I loved. Due to the average Iraqi army soldier, and not Iraqi, they meant American army soldiers, love of pornography, my memory stick would be filthy with viruses every time I had to go and get documents from my counterpart or his section NCO. What this is saying is that people are exchanging data on memory sticks that they plug into their computers that have gotten viruses from the bootleg VDs in an area of active warfare. So you are now allowing the enemy into your camp, and how long is it going to take before those viruses get up the CNC and go ahead and corrupt some of the command and control computers? Right?
I don't know.
But I don't want to find out. This is why... This is why you know who your mechanic is, right? Now, here's a great one. The Boeing 787 has networked IP to all the seats. It's also the same network that's connected to the flight safety control, navigation, business and administrative maintenance networks, and so on, which means that now it is conceivable. Now, they say, oh, we've got a proprietary solution where the two networks can't talk to each other, but it's all on the same wires. It's conceivable to fly the airplane from the passenger seat, but more importantly, it is possible to crash the airplane without being on it, because you can have a USB stick or a little mini computer plugged in somewhere. Can you say air gap? Why didn't they just have two separate networks? There is a reason that they separate the spectator stands from the race course. Right? And, you know, this is kind of something I don't want to experience. Now, of course, it's all fun and games until somebody gets hurt. So here's another great example. There are 3 million people, ballpark, that have cardiac pacemakers, and depending on which report you read, 300,000 to 600,000 new implants every year. I'm 51 years old, and another 21, 30, 40 years, I may have one of those. Most of the common are wireless implantable cardiac defibrillators, which means they can be reprogrammed without invasive surgery. And yeah, you're supposed to go ahead and have an antenna right next to them, but people have built antenna extenders. So you can build an antenna into a doorway and give somebody who walks in a heart attack. It's possible. They can be hacked. Now, I have bad news for you. Dick Cheney is not at risk. It turns out that there are special pacemakers for people of power. Now this is a fun one. You take a look at these guys here, and you think, well, they're crazy, right? Notice there are three of them. In case one of them gets in trouble, there are two to help. They have life preservers. They've thought about the fact that there's water here. And notice the bricks on the sidewalk there. They also have helmets. They may be crazy, but at least they're security conscious. Did I miss a slide there? No, it's gone. All right. Now, I'm sensibly paranoid, right? My passwords are reasonable size and hard to guess. I have different subnets in my home network for inside, my web servers, my wireless network. Nothing trusts the wireless networks. I have a flashlight in every piece of luggage I own. I don't have to think about it. It's always there. So I have a means of illuminating my escape in a hotel, and I walk the escape routes. I know where the two exits are from my hotel room. I know the nearest exit in all the airplanes, bars, theaters, and so on. So I got a question for all of you. Where's the nearest exit? Yeah, which way do you turn when you leave? Good. What about the one that's behind there?
One with padlock on it.
Oh, really? You've checked? Neither did I, just for the talk. Anyway, I measure risks, though. So I wear a bicycle helmet. I drive a convertible. There are, you know, pluses and minuses here. Limited roll protection, and I don't bother locking my car because many people carry master keys. It's called a Swiss Army knife. My laptop right here, it's disposable. I don't want to lose it, but there is nothing on there that's unique, and all the sensitive data on that laptop is encrypted, well encrypted. But today's Joe user, that's another story altogether. They're just in for a world of hurt. By the way, notice, no helmet, no jacket, no gloves. And the guys behind them, at least, are equipped. So what is Joe average user going to do when they're confronted with this, you know, signed by Citrix, but we can't confirm it? Well, Citrix helps us. On their website, they say, click yes if prompted. Sure, I believe you. Why not? But let's say you don't trust them. You go ahead and you look at the certificate. Right? And it says, gee, the certificate is valid. See that little green check mark? What are you complaining about? Okay, I'll do it. And here we have the whole transitive trust issue, but I want to point out that trust is never transitive. Right? The people who you trust to work on your car, you're entrusting your life with because they're working on your brakes, you don't trust them to mind your kids. Right? There was this negligent discharge in an airline cockpit a couple of months ago. It turns out that pilots are allowed to carry guns. And so negligent discharge means the gun went off. So imagine this conversation between the stewardess and the pilot. Do you guys really carry guns? Well, sure, little lady. It's a 357 SIG, same as the air marshals use. Can I hold it? Well, sure, but you have to realize I'm a trained professional. You can't just bang! Oh, shit. Right? And by the way, if you go ahead and look further in the certificate, I don't know what this means. I mean, I do, but I don't have any easy way of verifying it. I do this for a living. If you read French, don't spoil this for people. This is a pop-up from a website, and you know, it is blah, 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 blah. But what most users will see, porno sex, okay. Maybe it says, give up your firstborn male child and all of your bank account information to receive this porno. So when you get something like, can't identify 10026, who the hell's 10026? Failure management is hard. Security is hard. Cars have backup brake cylinders. Airlines have RATs. That's ram air turbines, which came in very handy when this Boeing 767 ran out of gas. Little thing drops out of the wing and powers enough of the hydraulics for them to land. Ships have watertight doors. We have battery backups, UPS, generators, all sorts of stuff like this. But our software? Most programs just crash. Or they fail unsafe. Getting real security right is harder. I'm not denying that, because we're not just dealing with failures, we're also dealing with attacks. And it's harder still for average users when they aren't immersed in it, surrounded by it, do it for a living. But you already knew that, right? Nothing new here. So this is the state of the world today. We are chicken with our heads cut off. This, by the way, is Mike the Headless Chicken, who was a famous celebrity chicken in the mid-1930s and so on. The farmer tried to cut off his head, and it didn't, and here's this chicken walking around for three more years. Poker bots. Anybody here play online poker? There's a guy who wrote a paper on how to write a poker bot. Now, there are two things you can do with the poker bot. One is you can get it to play poker for you and win money because it's got better algorithms. But with this sort of thing, you can also get it to get downloaded on somebody else's machine. And when you have a good hand, it will give them the illusion that they have a good hand. And they will bid high against you, and you'll win their money. And this sort of thing is not that hard to do. It's not just software where the problem exists. Diebold voting machines. Right, United States has electronic voting rigging machines, which are vehemently closed source, and there are no audit trails. And I talked to the election inspectors in my local office, and they said, well, you know, no, we can verify that the vote is okay because we know how many people came in the door and we know how many votes were cast, and as long as they add up, it's good. I could not convince them that that was just silly. But it's worse than that. Diebold published a picture of their machine and their keys, and some scientists went and cut the keys. And it turns out that you can just open all the Diebold machines with a key cut from that image. But they had the luxury of looking at the key and measuring it. This is a copy. I stuck this on my scanner just before I left. This is a copy of my key ring from my sophomore year. Now, I worked in the computer science department. They issued me six keys. I didn't want this lump. So when the janitor walked in, I said, do you have a key that opens all these doors? And he went, well, yeah. And I said, could I see it? And he goes, well, it's just a key. And in that second and a half, I read the depths on the keys, went back to my dorm room, and cut one with hand files. And I had a master to the building in a second and a half. Right? That's all that it took. Now, just to show you how hard this is and how easy it is, this particular key, the best locks on the left-hand side, have seven pins. Each of the pins fits one of 10 depths in an eighth of an inch. So visually, I was measuring an 80th of an inch of each of them in a second and a half, reading seven numbers. How good is our security when we can do that? Key lock. Right, the thing that is used for keyless entry systems, cars, garage doors, server rooms, that was cracked. Somebody posted the algorithm to Wikipedia. Somebody found the bug in it. And now with antenna extenders, you can clone keys from over 100 meters away. So much for security. So we need to fix this problem. This is a huge problem. And, yeah, okay, I think you should be a little more explicit here in step two, where then a miracle occurs. So let me give you an analogy. This is a lot of people's view of a castle. right? It's this wonderful structure, and it's got turrets, and it's very romantic, and it has windows which you can just enter through, and it's not very secure. This is my cat's idea of a castle. And it's not very secure either, because when he gets feisty, I just pick up the whole box. But he has great fun in there, and he has claws. But this is a real castle. And the castle was designed with security from the ground up. Right, now this is late medieval. It's made out of bricks instead of early medieval made out of cyclopean stones. But you'll notice windows? No. Arrow slits? Yeah. This is an example of a castle. It was built on a rocky promontory where there's the river, which is kind of hard to access by when you're rowing it, and a cliff. And then there's a curtain wall around the entire city, which protects the city. And if you need to, the lord of the castle was obliged to have everybody come into the castle for protection. Right? This is an example of the curtain wall. Now, I want to show you an example of security from the ground up. Look at how this thing is. There's an extension there where you can fire weapons and so on. But if the enemy happens to come in and breach one of the walls and get in, they cannot get from one section of the curtain wall to the other. Yes, there's a... I can't point here. There's a flight of stairs on the left-hand side there, which goes up and around, but then there's a 12 or 14-foot drop, which is kind of unhealthy in full plate mail. If they were invaded, the defenders would simply pull out the board. And now you've isolated the two sections. Brilliant design from the ground up. And if you did invade and you wanted to get to the other section, sure, you can run down that exposed staircase where they're shooting at you. Here's the entrance to the castle. There's a portcullis, which drops down, thud, and then there are arrow slits and a murder hole, and you can drop boiling oil onto people. They thought about security from the ground up and things you can hide behind when you're doing that. This is the fantasy of a drawbridge, and you remember how it is in the movies. You know, raise the drawbridge, crack, 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 and it slowly is going up, and then the guy who's cranking it gets shot with an arrow, and it stops, and, you know, maybe somebody cuts the rope. That's not how a drawbridge works. That's the fantasy of a drawbridge. This is how a real drawbridge works. There is a pivot point, a huge set of rock counterweights, and supports which you can pull at from behind that fortified wall. And when you do, the drawbridge goes thwap, and now it's closed. No cranking, just haul out the supports and you're locked. And then you have to haul it down. In those days, they thought about security because failure was not an option. This is a wonderful painting by Vasily Verschagin in the Tretyakov Gallery in Moscow. It's the Siege of Damascus, but it gives you the idea. When you lose, bad things happen. So they also had defense in depth. They had these things called hauberks, right? Basically an iron shirt, which weighs 40-some-odd pounds, and then leather plate mail, which protects against some more, and then an iron hat, and then something with colors so you know who you're hacking is not your friend, and then a helm and a shield and so on. And all of this was really necessary because there are guys out there with big can openers. Right? The halberd was designed to, well, kill people. Failure is not an option. Now, I don't want to wear a hauberk. I'm sensibly paranoid. I am aware of my surroundings. But I don't want to worry all the time about, you know, is my armor on? I want my armor to be there anyway. My software needs to wear the hauberk. My operating system should be my castle keep. This whole thing, so the user can't get infected? No, there's a keep. If you're in the keep, that is the safest place. None of this ring zero stuff that, you know, can get in there. Sorry, it should be secure. My applications are therefore secure and should be secure on my behalf. None of this open a Microsoft Word document or a VI document, just to be fair, and have it run code for me that I'm not aware of. Sure, if I download an application and run it, my fault. If I download data, I don't want it to run anything. Which means no shortcuts. Make the right decisions for the user. Don't give them those security pop-ups because they don't know what you're talking about. Don't trust them to do it because they'll get it wrong, guaranteed. We need to insist on a security mindset. We are the people who can change things, and I'm proposing that we do. This is my action message. So what can we do? Well, refuse to accept the status quo, right? Because security problems are not just the way things are, or rather shouldn't be just the way things are. They're the result of bad design and implementation, and yes, sometimes mistakes, but most often it's poor choices as opposed to oopses. They're the result of carelessness and stupidity, and we should not tolerate them. I'm not proposing that you guys are out of business. I'm proposing that you have better jobs where you don't have to say, I'm mad as hell and not going to take it anymore. Let's do something about it so that we all still have well-paying jobs and actually get to make a difference in the security world, because security is everyone's problem. There's this old adage, it's a true story about a Protestant priest in Nazi Germany. And, you know, when they came to take away the socialists, I didn't speak up. And when they came to take away such and such, I watched and was silent and so on, until finally they came to take me and there was nobody left to speak up. It was said in the first day, when a bear attacks, you don't have to be faster than the bear, you just have to be faster than the other guy. I'm sorry, that's bullshit. That is marketing bullshit. You need to help the other guy get away from the bear also, because once the bear decides, people are tasty, you're the next target. So, yeah, all you're doing is delaying the inevitable by letting the other guy get nailed. You're going to get nailed after there are no more easy targets. So we need to fix the problem, because it's everybody. But you knew that. I'm not telling you anything you don't know. I'm just speaking it out loud. So this is the future. Can we fix the existing problems? To a limited degree. Because there are bad configurations, bad software, bad defaults. They're rampant. There's little education. There's even less concern. My mom just wants me to make her computer work for her. She doesn't want to do it herself. I'm happy to do it for her. And she's better protected than most people, but there are so many other people who have to rely on CompUSA Geek Squad. It's a steady state condition when we try and fix the existing problems. And this is an example. It should not be this easy. Just ask Google to look for select and from and where in the URL and in the title PHP MyAdmin. And all of these are unprotected PHP administration pages where you can just wipe out people's databases, change data in them. And notice, it found 113,000 of them. It shouldn't be that easy. Can we prevent future problems? I think so. And sometimes it'll be easy. Here's an easy example. This is called a scramble pad. When you have to enter a PIN number, if it's the same PIN number every time, an attacker can detect via key wear, smudge patterns, you know, grease and so on, which keys are being used. And now they know the numbers. All they have to do is guess the order, unless you happen to have one that uses all 10, in which case it doesn't help. But what this does is it puts the keys in a different place every time. So there's no key wear. It's a trivial fix to an endemic problem. Most of the time, it's not going to be easy. So here's how you do it. No, you can't have ActiveX. Sorry. No, you can't use Matt's script archives. Right? It's Perl. That's not so great. I don't care if you need it tomorrow. It's going to take longer to install all the patches. Tough. No, your password cannot be NCC1701. FTP servers, clear text passwords. Sorry. No, I won't open a hole in the firewall. Right? And I know you like Windows 98. Tough. And the problem is, too many administrators, managers, bosses, security people say, that's inconceivable. But it's not inconceivable. There are nicer ways to do it. You know, I'm sorry, but you can't have ActiveX. Or I realize you need it tomorrow, but I regret that it's going to take longer to install all the patches. Or, you know, they're pleasanter ways of saying things, but the basic gist is the same. You can appeal to their sensibilities. You know, do you like spam? No, me neither. So good security will help reduce it. You have an MBA from Harvard. You can't remember a 15-character passphrase? Come on. You've read Shakespeare, right? You know what they call people without good security? Dead. So what do you want to be? So a doctor, a system administrator, and a security expert walk into a bar. That was the joke. Doctors have respect, right, because they fix things. You go in sick, you hopefully leave better. And they have M&Ms to make sure that you do leave better and not worse. System administrators get absolutely no respect because you don't know what they're supposed to do, but you do know when it has failed. And so they get blamed when things break. They don't get credited for making things work. Security people are sort of halfway in between. And I'm proposing we work ourselves more towards the doctor side and away from the system administrator side, because people know what we're supposed to do, make them safe. And they also know that we cry wolf a lot and get in the way, and we have to tell them that's a good thing. And we get blamed when the break-ins occur, and I'd like to make it so the break-ins don't happen. We can do it. But it ain't going to be easy, right? And I told you I'd be unpopular. But we do have to do it. In 1997, Marcus Ranham suggested that they scrap everything and start over, and everyone laughed at his joke, but he wasn't joking. I'm not either. Patching just delays the inevitable. Good software really can't be written on top of a vulnerable operating system. If you've got Swiss cheese for your core, there's holes everywhere. And the distributed base is too large to fix, but you knew all that already. Mistakes have been made in the past. Crypto was considered a munition for far too long. And so consequently, our applications don't use them. Now, I've used PGP since 1993, but crypto has a history of computational expense and also user and developer naivete, and only recently are we getting it, and it's still incomprehensible to most of the world. But fortunately, there were some people who decided to break the ITAR restrictions, tattoo the algorithms on their arms, and sort of make PGP and things like that possible. And thank God, because we really need crypto now. Mistakes were also made. We're paying for some of our design errors made 35 years ago. Right? You know why FTP uses two privileged ports, ports 20 and 21, right? When everything else uses one port? Well, if you look at RFC 454, which was begat by 354 going back to 265, 172, and originally 114, which is April 16, 1971, 37 years ago, and we're still using FTP, it specified that commands are on a telnet session and data is on a separate connection, and that's because NCP, which predated TCP, only allowed one-way socket traffic. 37 years ago, we're still using the same protocol. Mark Musco went ahead and coded this, came up with a specification, never rewrote it, and we've just been going, oh, that looks good, let's copy it. Right? And by the way, just in case you doubt me, this is heard from Steve Crocker himself. We rely on computers for everything, right? The critical infrastructure, the power grid, generating plants, water systems, sewage, food, transportation, communications, hospital systems, drug production, drug distribution, drug checking. We can't live without them, which means that we need to make them secure so that our lives are secure, because our lives do depend on their security. And you already knew that, right? I hope you did. We need to fix things. We need to demand changes from the software developers, from the operating system developers, from the application developers, from the protocol designers, and so on. We need to change the mindset so that security is from the ground up, from the bottom of the layer, from the hardware and going on up. And we need to do it now, because it's already too late and it's just going to get worse, because otherwise, if we don't fix it, this is what's coming around the corner. But the problem is, you already knew that. Security is if your life depended on it, because it does. Thanks.